This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
Welcome to Campus Voices, where each week we look at some key issues that affect UK students, the UK campus, and the Lexington community. Campus Voices is created by Journalism 304 students with the help of the journalism faculty. Please send any questions to news at wrfl.fm.
Good evening and welcome to Campus Voices, a program where we take you behind the scenes in Lexington and on the UK campus. I'm your host, Mackie Davis, and today we will be discussing the true meaning of amateurism. Many sport leagues, including the Kentucky High School Athletic Association, have their own definition. KHSAA has the word amateurism in their bylaws three separate times. But the National Collegiate Athletic Association, or the NCAA, has a slightly different angle on the word amateurism. On the official NCAA website, there are several things that can hurt your status as an amateur using their current definition. These things include signing a contract with a professional team, playing alongside professionals, participating in tryouts or practices with the professional team, or agreeing to be represented by an agent. They also say, quote, 90% of student athletes are automatically certified. Even though the NCAA has their own stance on amateurism, WRFL reporter Branson Leet reports on how some amateurs are able to go pro while simultaneously remaining in school.
The line between amateurism and professionalism isn't defined by any standard besides being paid for performance. But what if a player was employed by a professional sports team while still being eligible to play in the NCAA? There have been multiple examples, but the most recent and prominent is Heisman winner Kyler Murray. Murray was drafted 9th overall by the Oakland A's in the MLB draft, but insisted on starting at quarterback for Oklahoma in his final year of eligibility. Due to a loophole in the NCAA rules, a college athlete can simultaneously play for a professional sports organization as long as the player isn't on scholarship for the sport they are being paid for. Because of this rule, Murray was able to play football and flourish, winning the Heisman Trophy and leading the Sooners to the college football playoff. Murray has recently decided to go pro in football instead of baseball, and has said he will return the money owed to the A's. While amateurism is defined as an athlete not being paid for their skill, examples like Murray show that the NCAA guidelines can be distorted in the case of multi-sport athletes. For WRFL, I'm Branson Leet.
We'll get to that in just a second, but first we have two guests with us in the studio today. Elena Kwan is a member of the University of Kentucky women's gymnastics team. She's competed in the All-Olympia Gymnastics Center, represented Belarus at the 2015 World Championships. She was a level 10 state champion in California, and she was a junior Olympian. Also in the studio with us, we have former UK student-athlete Cameron Mills. Mills played for the Kentucky men's basketball team between the years 1994 and 98, and is a two-time NCAA champion. Thank you both for being with us here today.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
So we'll get to some of those specific examples like the Kyler Murray situation here in a second, because I do want to talk about that. But first, I sort of want to start general. We've already gone over some of the rules and the definitions surrounding amateurism. But as two Division I athletes, what's your general opinion on how amateur is currently defined and if student athletes should be paid? Cameron, we'll start with you.
Yes, they should be paid. Number two, amateur, it's arbitrary. I mean, just in that opening part, with everything, there's no definition. There's two different definitions. There's three definitions. Even we have a definition here, but we're willing to change it depending on what sport they play in certain circumstances. So how's that a rule? The NCAA back in the 50s came up with the whole term student athlete just to keep student athletes from being paid. I mean, it's a made-up term. I mean, it's not that we don't go to class. It's not that we're not playing. It's just that it's a made-up term. So it's just kind of arbitrary and ridiculous and a limitation only here. And I don't see the reason. I don't see what it's protecting is my frustration with it.
Elena?
I do agree with some of what Cameron said. Again, it's obviously the NCAA. They make their own bylaws. Like, they stand by what they do. But I'm also coming from, like, a sport that kind of lives by those bylaws. So as a gymnast, you are not allowed to attend school if you become a pro gymnast. And that's just always what I've lived by throughout my whole gymnastics career. So that's just all I've known. But to see things like this, I definitely think that it should be an option, per se, for athletes, because I know what it's like. You work hard and you get perks as an athlete and all this stuff, but really it comes down to nitty gritty hours every day in the gym and just any kind of place or obligations you have to go to as an athlete. And so I definitely agree that I think athletes do deserve to be paid in this way, but I also understand how people could question it.
Cameron, you're a part of two of the most maybe marketable Kentucky basketball teams ever, and especially in recent history. Mm-hmm. Do you find there is a difference between paying these athletes maybe in terms of a salary basis versus just allowing them to market off of their own likeness?
Well, I think one of them, as far as NCAA will go, will fall first, and that's the likeness thing. The likeness right. thing is, again, the most ridiculous of all of it, where the school can market your name and your face and your likeness. You can't. I mean, to the point where they're so careful. It goes back to, what are they afraid? What are they really afraid of? Well, what is the protection of us? I got paid for mowing lawns when I was a kid. I learned how to handle money from mowing lawns as a kid. What are they afraid I'm going to do to myself now if, as a college kid, where I'm supposed to be learning about life in general at the highest level? Well, what are they afraid of? So, I mean, I just don't understand that. So the likeness thing just legally has already fallen once in the Ed O'Bannon lawsuit. And I think more and more the athletes are going to get more and more control over that. I find it frustrating with this limitation. It's only here. It's only in sports. I mean, it's only whether it's gymnastics, whether it's baseball, whether it's basketball. It's just here. Why? I mean, what good is it doing any of us? I mean, I don't see the protection of it. I don't see the need of it.
Right. Elena, you briefly touched on this earlier about just the sheer amount of work that goes into being a college athlete. From your perspective now as a current athlete at UK, on average, how many hours per week do you think you spend on gymnastics or gymnastics required events?
Well, I can tell you right now, per week, especially during preseason, because the hours amount up because we're not even in season yet, so that's not even put into account. But practice-wise, we are 20 hours a week, and that's only practice. And then we also, Mondays and Thursdays, we wake up at 6 a.m. and go do 7 a.m. lift before practice, and then we go 8:15 to 11 p.m., or 11 p.m., excuse me, 11 a.m. And then on top of that, as a freshman, you're required to get academic hours as a student athlete. And so you go into this place called Quiet Study, and each team is different. You have different requirements. For us specifically, we had to get a minimum of 8 hours a week as freshmen in that Quiet Study alone. So that, on top of everything else with the 20 hours a week and then the hours that you spend in the weight room, you're adding 8 hours to the other hours I just mentioned. And so obviously it's already racking up, and then on top of that you're already going to your classes and everything, but you can see we're already going over approximately 30 and more hours a week.
And Cameron, I bet, how does that compare?
I'm sorry, not to jump in, but
no, go ahead.
That's just during season, but there isn't how much time are you off season?
So yes, good question. So gymnastics, it's kind of, there's really not an right. off season. There's sports where literally you have an off season and then you take time off and you can take a couple months off. But really for gymnastics, it is best to stay fit in the sport year round. And so I wouldn't classify it as an off season, but when we're not competing from basically May to technically December, but our preseason in Kentucky starts, or actually in any other university, it starts in September and it goes to December, basically until your first meet, and then you're just on the go from there.
One of the biggest arguments sort of against what you all are saying right now is that student athletes, quote, are paid through scholarships, housing, textbooks, meal plans, stipends. How would you respond to that, and do you think that's just not enough?
Well, I don't think it's even being paid. I mean, I tell you what, I will drop this whole idea when Mitch Barnhart, who I love, by the way, and the president of the university, who I love, when they are paid and compensated for what they do through continued education, I'm good. So when everybody is paid the same way we're paid, then I'm okay with this whole thing of being paid for what we do for the university. But until then, again, why are we separated and made different? What is the reason that, okay, well, we give you a scholarship? And my other issue is this. What a scholarship is worth? Well, that depends on what school you go to. I mean, I could go to Vandy. You know what scholarship is at Vandy? It's like five times what it is at UK. So does that mean going to Vandy, I'm paid more to play basketball? Which who would go to Vandy to play basketball? To go to Vandy and play basketball as opposed to coming here? So there's no rhyme or reason. There's no rules that should be in place. And again, it's just all arbitrary. It's just, here's our rules. They're for the protection of you when they're not. They're for the hounding of money.
Elena, I see you nodding along. Do you tend to agree with that?
Yeah, I do. Because, like, honestly, at the end of the day, like he said, like, it just depends on the school. Like, for me, when I was being recruited, like, I was obviously looking at some schools in California, and which is where I'm from. And obviously the tuition there is outrageously higher than Kentucky in general. But, like, should that change anything? No. Like, we all, like, every athlete in America, I believe, works just as hard to get into the position they are in, to earn the scholarship that they are in. And if you deserve it and it's paid off, then I think it should be okay.
Well, you all have lots of people on your side of the argument. Obviously, some people do believe the promise of a scholarship just isn't enough to truly compensate student athletes. I'm sure these two student athletes would agree with that. But in sports such as football, players who never make it to the next level do risk severe injury for the love of their game. WRFL's Branson Leet has more on if full ride scholarships are worth what amateur athletes put their bodies through.
Every professional sport is fueled by money. Whether it be players, coaches, owners, fans, or gambling, income is the name of the game. The same cannot be said for amateur athletics. According to the NCAA bylaws, no player should take financial benefits, whether it be direct pay, selling memorabilia, or any income for their likeness. Other levels of amateur play, such as the KHSAA, also stand by these guidelines of players not receiving benefits for their play. KHSAA Commissioner Julian Tackett had this to say on the subject.
For school-based sport, the absolute foundation is that it be amateur. You're playing for the enjoyment of the game in addition to the educational part of school. In other words, it's a supplement to the classroom, not to replace the classroom. Therefore, you're an amateur. You don't get paid.
Schools such as Northwestern have formed player unions speaking out against the lack of pay for the amount of trauma amateur athletes go through. However, NCAA officials rebutted by saying the full ride scholarships and the financial support that comes through academics, housing, and athletic facilities is enough in terms of income for amateurs. The debate has seen little resolution since this union was formed back in 2014 and remains a hot topic to this day. Unless serious changes are made to the guidelines of academic governing bodies like the NCAA or KHSAA, financial restrictions will remain an uncompromising part of amateur athletics. For WRFL Lexington, I'm Branson Leet.
So we just heard about, of course, those financial restrictions placed on student athletes. Elena, with that in mind, what drives you as a student athlete to really keep pushing yourself forward when you know that you're not going to be able to bring any money in for your success?
Well, really, at the end of the day, like you said, I'm not bringing money into, like, my own benefit at the end of it at all. But, like, the way I look at it, especially in just, like, the sport of gymnastics with there not being, like, pro teams after and everything, once you get a scholarship to college, like, you know, like, wow, like, this is how it's paid off. Like, my hard work got me here to get a free education, which not a lot of people can say, and I'm so grateful for that still. But, like, that's kind of how I look at it, and I look at it as, like, an opportunity to, like, okay, yes, I've been a part of a club team my whole life, but really in club, it's very individualized and you're on your own out there for the most part. But then when you come to college, it's completely different. It's a whole team atmosphere. It's girls cheering you on because you want to do well for one another. And like, it's just a new atmosphere compared to club gymnastics. And so really what drives me is like, I genuinely want our team to do well. And especially under the circumstances that our program has been in the past, where we weren't really one of the top dog SECs in the nation by any means, but then these past few years since I've been on the team, we've really been up and coming and breaking records and making history as a program. Like, literally, that's what drives me to keep going and to keep working hard. It's just not just the success of the team, but like to do it for my team and to do it with my girls and for my coaches. And honestly, also for my family back home who has invested so much in me just to get to where I am now. So that's really what motivates me to keep going at this rate.
So we heard about this loophole a little earlier in the show with the NCAA, where the policy states that amateur athletes can go pro in one sport if you're competing as an amateur in the other. Kyler Murray, of course, is a prominent recent example. Do you think it's possible for a student to really be able to balance that line between a professional athlete and an amateur collegiate athlete? And is that even fair, Cameron?
Well, I don't know how often they're – okay, so you've got class, right? If you're playing in college, you've got your sport in college, and then you've got this other thing out there. I don't know how often the three intersect as far as time that you're having to balance them this, you know, on one day. So, I mean, because there are seasons, even though, as Lane said, there really is no off season, but we've seen people professionally play more than one sport. Well, play more than one sport.
Right.
So is it possible? Yes. Is it easy? No, it's not.
Is it ethical? To make money in one while not being allowed to make money in another.
It's unethical to not pay people for their worth. I mean, that's where the ethics comes in. I mean, again, we're going back to a bizarre, you said the word loophole. Well, this is a bizarre loophole invented in the 50s when the NCAA arbitrarily decided, you know what, we got to protect these people because otherwise our sport's going to get corrupt. That's capitalism. It sometimes it gets corrupt. And to make the argument to me that it's not corrupt now, I mean, we've seen pretty recently how corrupt it is because people are getting paid to play
right.
against the NCAA rule. So I don't know why ethics would even enter into the conversation. What would be wrong with doing it when we're talking about one rule from one entity called the NCAA, and it's the only thing in the world like that?
Right. Well, heated debate, obviously, with the NCAA and collegiate athletes, but high school athletic associations also have to handle this debate to a slightly different extent. Here in Kentucky, high school sports are a huge part of our local culture. So WRFL's Hayden Hooper explores the case of Lucy Lee, a talented amateur golfer who faced backlash for participating on the LPGA Tour alongside other professionals.
Another story of amateur being under a young student athlete can be seen in Lucy Lee. Lee is a 16-year-old golfer and was the youngest female to qualify for the U.S. Women's Open. Beginning of January, the USGA announced the investigation on Lee about the appearance in a recent Apple advertisement. USGA considers an amateur being someone who plays the sport competitively or recreationally with no financial gain. After the recent involvement with the advertisement, USGA investigated the situation and gave Lee a once-in-a-lifetime warning. Lee went to Twitter to apologize on the situation, saying that she accepts the responsibility in participating in the Apple Watch ad. If the USGA didn't give out the warning, Lee would not have been allowed to participate in any events in the league. For WRFL Lexington, I'm Hayden Hooper.
So Lee will be eligible to continue to attempt to qualify for those upcoming LPGA events. But like we just heard, she was given that once-in-a-lifetime warning. That's
weird,
an odd phase, or not phrasing.
Yeah, and I don't know what it means. And I assume, Hayden, that came from, and you're off mic, but I assume that came from KHSAA? Was that a Kentucky thing, or was that just a high school thing? Just a high school thing. So
So why do you think that exception was necessarily made for Lee in this case?
Well, and that's part of the problem is there are exceptions that are made for some people. And it probably depends on how good your attorney is at arguing your case.
Right.
I'm sure there are extenuating circumstances. But, you know, we look at the Enos Kanter thing that happened here a few years ago. Well, very similar situations have happened in the NCAA where same kind of thing. And yet that player was allowed to play at their school. So if it's arbitrary rules, and I know I keep using that word, but I don't know what else to call it because I still don't see the purpose of these rules existing. I don't see them protecting anybody. I just see this as an excuse, honestly, for the NCAA to keep their money and to not share it.
Right. And the case with Lee specifically and the USGA might seem rare. Of course, there are those other exceptions, like you touched on Kanter here at UK. But similar situations actually happen quite often. Another one that was in the news recently, of course, was Mario Davenport and the Alabama High School Athletic Association. Hayden Hooper explains how Mario Davenport and the AHSAA were at odds with one another as they attempted to better define her amateurism.
Amateurism is not only ruled in the NCAA, but in all of the high school athletic associations around the country. All 51. In Alabama late last year, the Athletic Association had a lot on their hands as one player came back with a gold medal from Team USA in her age class. Her name was Mayori Davenport. Davenport accepted money from Team USA that sum up to $857.20. This, according to Alabama's bylaws, is illegal, and she has ruled ineligible to participate in play for her high school team at Charles Henderson High School in Troy, Alabama. I got the chance to discuss with KHSAA Commissioner Julian Tackett about the issue in Alabama, and he said that Kentucky has a similar rules on this issue. Here's what Commissioner Tackett had to say about Davenport's situation in Alabama.
Every participant in just about every state signs at our level, signs an acknowledgement that they understand rules. And one of the rules is you can't get paid to play, period. This is not an anti-patriotism thing. This is you knew the rules and you did it anyway.
He also told me that playing for your country and getting paid is the same thing for someone to get paid for playing in an AAU tournament. However, in this case, the NCAA did not rule that Davenport is ineligible to play next fall, as she is a Rutgers women's basketball signee. She was also given reinstated early January to play in the Alabama Athletic Association sanctioned events. For WRFL Lexington, I'm Hayden Hooper.
A tough situation down in Alabama that I want to get y'all's opinion on in just a few seconds, but of course, it made news nationally. Jay Billis weighing in on it, a lot of other national analysts. But here in Kentucky, the rules are similar. WRFL reporter Branson Leet also got the chance to talk to KHSAA Commissioner Julian Tackett about his organization's restrictions on high school athletes here in Kentucky in terms of eligibility, both financially and academically. The commissioner also weighs in on how an individual institution should be held accountable for any violations of the KHSAA's bylaws.
Kentucky athletics garner a huge following from the fan bases of the 280 schools within the state. Around 110,000 student athletes compete in various sports across the Bluegrass. KHSAA Commissioner Julian Tackett emphasizes how being an amateur student is defined by preparing for life beyond sports.
Our job has zero to do with preparing people to play at the next level of sport. Our job has 100% to do with preparing them for the next level of life.
The vast majority of students will not receive scholarship offers to play at universities. The KHSAA understands this and works to make sports not about the money they could make or the fame they would earn, but the character that can be built.
94% of the students that play high school sports never play beyond high school. 94. It's a little over 1%, for example, that get to play collegiately in basketball. So our efforts are focused on the 98 or 99%.
According to the commissioner, the KHSAA is built on the foundations of academics and athletic honesty. For WRFL, I'm Branson Leet.
We're back now with Cameron Mills and Elena Kwan. A lot to digest there with these two different things. Like we just heard, sort of from the other side of the coin from Julian Tackett and the KHSAA's opinion on things. Elena, like we talked about earlier, you competed on a national stage and even at one point the international stage as a high schooler. How closely were you monitored in that situation, and what sort of rules did you have to make sure you were following in order to retain that eligibility?
Right. At that point, I was already verbally committed to the University of Kentucky, so I was going through the NCAA clearinghouse and all that stuff. For the most part, monitoring stayed at a pretty decent level, I would say. None of it ever got so intense or like too less. It was more of just like, as long as like I didn't take money from anyone else or from European companies because I was representing Belarus per se, like as long as I just didn't take any money, I was okay. And they honestly like were pretty encouraging for me to like go take this opportunity because it gives me experience before going to college and getting on that international level and getting that competition feel. So really, like, going back to the whole monitoring thing, it really didn't get, they never like narrowed me down, I would say. Like, it was just as long as I followed the rules, I was okay.
Right.
Did you get any kind of compensation at all for the Belarus thing? I mean, anything per diems or anything like that?
No.
Nothing at all. So
nothing.
Your flight over there, all of that. Why? Again, why?
Right. And you talk about these arbitrary rules a lot, and sort of the difference here that we even hear between high school rules and collegiate rules, like she was, like she just said, she was already signed with a school verbally. So she was under NCAA rules,
right,
of high school rules. How complicated does that line sort of get?
Between what?
Between the high school sports and the college sports.
I don't think that's complicated at all, because they're both similar in that, you know, they, and Julian's, I understand what Julian's saying, Julian Tackett that we just heard from. But what he said was, is that we exist, meaning the KHSAA, we exist but not to prepare these student athletes for their next level. Because
he did say that
only 6% will go on. He said we exist to prepare these student athletes for their next level of life.
Right.
Okay, then what does money or them being paid have to do with any of that? Because the next level of life, they are going to enter the real world on some level and be compensated for their work. So I still don't understand why this rule exists. What is this protecting?
Right. And like you just brought this point up, but the next stage of their life, you know, for some that is playing in college and then playing in the pros, and that does involve getting paid.
Yeah, for a very, very small percentage it is.
Right.
But for some, the next level of life is entering the real world. For some, it's just going to college and being a student. So the non-pay for play or the limiting, I mean, completely, because it baffles my mind that you are not compensated in any way, shape, or form to go to another country to compete for their Olympic team, Olympic trials team, or just national team?
National team.
You weren't given per diems. Basically, this is all out of your pocket to go and to perform for someone else, which is exactly what we do every day when we get jobs. We go and we perform, and we're compensated, quote unquote, every 2 weeks for it. Why is this different? What is so special about this that they're trying to protect the purity of it when we all know it's not that pure anyway?
Right. And you bring up the fact that only a very small percentage of high school athletes will go on to the college level, of course, and even smaller percentage from college will go to the pros for some injury or talent or just burning out. But obviously some sports simply just don't have a, quote, professional league. For example, sports like gymnastics, track, field, swimming, stuff like that. But for some athletes in these areas, they are able to make money eventually for their sport in other ways. For a lucky few, of course, that means the Olympics. Being able to represent Team USA is a dream for many, but it used to be exclusive only to amateur athletes. Branson Lee details how the Olympics are more than an event for athletes, a triumph for amateurism, and the dedication that goes into earning a spot. But it's also a struggle of ethics.
Every 4 years, the best athletes in the world come together to represent their countries and compete to see who is triumphant. An interesting clause formally implemented at the Olympics was the ban of all professional athletes from competition. As time went on and educational institutions advanced, the division in amateurism from country to country grew immensely. The ban of professionals was slowly phased out over time. Because of this amateur gap, the Internal Olympic Committee decided to allow all professional competitors subject to approval after the 1988 Olympic Games. Now that the playing field is even between amateurs and professionals at the Olympics, the question of pay for amateur athletes has come into question. Many governing bodies have prohibited any financial benefits for enrolled students. But the Olympics is a market for sponsorships and rewards. This is one of the more severe restrictions of being an amateur athlete. Someone like world-renowned gymnast Simone Biles forfeited her scholarship to UCLA to forego collegiate gymnastics. In doing so, she was considered a pro and received all of her benefits at the 2016 Olympic Games. Had she not backed out of her commitment to UCLA, she would not have been eligible for any of her rewards for earning the gold medal in 4 competitions at the event. As scholastic restrictions remain unchanged, expect more amateur Olympians to forego university, strike it big at the Olympics and other events. For WRFL Lexington, I'm Branson Leet.
The Olympics, there's something that so many little boys and little girls grew up dreaming of going to. But Elena, especially in a sport like gymnastics, we just heard that example of Simone Biles. The athletes are typically so young, especially high school athletes, underclassmen in college. So marketing off that Olympic fame would mean, of course, in Biles' case, giving up the chance to go and compete on a collegiate level. If you put yourself in those shoes, how difficult is that decision?
Gosh, that would be probably the hardest decision in my life so far, for sure. Because at least for me, I've always grown up around, you know, get an education. Like, education is so important. My mother was a teacher. She literally preached education to me, like, how important it is. And my dad, he came over from China as a diver and was able to earn an athletic scholarship to Cal State Long Beach to dive for them. And literally, if it weren't for that education, he wouldn't know the amount of English he knows today and all the business knowledge that he knows today. And so I've always grown up with, like, get an education no matter what you do. And so for her to go through that and choose her success as a U.S. gymnast, or like not take that success and get that education that I'm sure so many kids all over the nation have been preached about, like, it's so important to have this. It's really tough decision. It's harder than most people think. Like, I'm sure she debated about this for quite some time.
Do you think it's a fair one to make people choose between making money off, you know, getting on cereal boxes for getting a gold medal and being able to experience college?
Well, the thing is, they have that choice still. I mean, she can come back and go to college, maybe not on scholarship,
right?
Maybe not compete for the team, but she can go to college and get her education. My issue here is with the marketing opportunity that these universities are giving up to have someone like her go and do so well in the Olympics, get this national name, and then come back to your university and compete with your team.
Right.
Wouldn't that bring in more revenue? Wouldn't that bring in more attention to a non-revenue sport to have someone like her? And again, because of a ridiculous rule, now you can't do that. Well, again, what's it hurting?
Right. And you bring up that interesting factor that the non-revenue sports versus the revenue sports. So you tend to see more issues coming about with those revenue sports.
Wonder
but in
why.
The Olympics, you know, that's often not the case.
Well, except it's getting worse and worse with the Olympics because, it's again, it comes down to NBC and all the money they put in and all the marketing, as you said, the promotional ideas. So, look, there's no doubt that the more money gets involved, the more corruptible something becomes.
Right.
But let's not lie to ourselves and think that because there's no money involved, air quotes, because there is, you know, we're paying our coach here $8 million a year. I mean, there is a lot of money involved
right.
that it's going to be corruptible to the point where we can't have it.
Right. We heard in that report that as these restrictions aren't going to be changing anytime soon, you could expect more amateur Olympians to forego their university, sort of creating that trend. Obviously, no one really knows how that's going to go at this point, but if you had to guess, do you agree with that trend?
In basketball, for example, and I don't know about gymnastics, but in basketball, there's always the threat of a league that's forming because right now we've got the NBA rule that you have to be at least 19 or whatever it is. So you have to go to college for 1 year typically before you can be eligible for the NBA draft. There is a league that's forming, apparently with a lot of financial backing, to mitigate that 1 year. And so it's a quote unquote minor league. It's like a farm system kind of thing. And there've been threats to this for a lot. At some point it's going to work. There is going to be something like that. But one of the things I think right now that's gonna happen more and more often is China. China is a huge up and coming basketball state. And they are paying a lot of money to have players go over there and play that would not make that much money here. So
right.
That's one thing that bothers me is that if we're going to continue this rule where you can't get paid to play in college, you're going to see a lot of talented players foregoing NCAA at all so that they can go make that, you know, $1 million for 1 year in China when they're 19 years old and then come back. Is there going to be a learning curve as far as culture? Sure. But they're going to have that anyway. So it's just a matter of more and more of them getting brave enough to say, I'll go to China for a year.
Right. And you bring up that point about international and having to go overseas and do things. Countries across the world have varying levels of professionalism, amateurism, you know, college even. Like, everything is different across the world. Should professionals be able to compete at the Olympics despite the advantages maybe that some athletes have in certain countries?
Well, it's probably more of a question for you since you're in more of an Olympic sport, but the rest of the world has been doing that anyway.
Right.
They've let the best of their best compete in the Olympics. We just now started to allow that because we were tired of getting beat by these. So why are we limiting ourselves to amateurs competing when we can let our best go and win our gold medals? Which again comes down to prestige, honor, money. And I mean, when all that comes and goes, all of a sudden these rules start to get a little washed away.
Right. Elena, final thoughts on that?
I mean, like, the Olympics, you, as an athlete, it's the best of the best that go there. And I do believe the best of the best should go there. Are there fuzzy areas, per se, about pro players going? Absolutely. Like, there are definitely many questions about whether they should go there or not. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I do believe, you know, like I said, like, Olympics is for the best athletes in the world to go. And I think the best athletes should have that opportunity.
Right. Well, thank you both again. We have Cameron Mills and Elena Kwan in the studio with us. Thank you for all of your input and experience today. It's really made for an informative newscast for sure. So join us again next Wednesday, and we'll be talking about the increasing frequency of hepatitis A outbreaks in Lexington and across the Commonwealth. For Campus Voices and WRFL, I'm Maggie Davis. Good night.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm. And, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to wrfl.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.